We're going to be talking about your car, your questions, your dilemmas, and so forth and so on. We've got lots of emails that we have from last week, and I thought I'd bring one of them up. But I wanted to tell you first. First of all, let me tell you the phone number. Because of technical difficulties, we're not going to get to you for probably about 10 minutes. So you might want to just call in and set it down. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. All righty. And let's see where we're at. I wanted to tell you something. You can tell that we're frazzled because Mark made a mistake this morning, and now we're all paying for it. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Quality Transmission. If you have an issue with the transmission, Bob and Steve, or anybody at Quality Transmission, is who you need to call. They do repairs, they do diagnosis, automatic standards. They have years of experience on trucks and cars and RVs and motorhomes and 4x4s. They're located in Tempe on McClintock, just north of University and south of the 202. So no matter where you live, they're just a hopscotch off the freeway, and they're worth the drive. Not too long ago, somebody went to talk to them, and they took him out. They took a scanner, and they were able to identify the problem and give him an estimate by just driving the car with the scanner while the customer made it happen. That's really good customer service as far as I'm concerned. Okay, now, put on your science hat, because we're going to be talking about science here, and this is what my industry is really good for, and that is nothing factual. Okay, let's talk about science first. A micron, 1 micron is 1/1000th of 39 inches, which is a meter. 1/1000th of 39 inches, so that's decimal point. And then it's 4 zeros, and then it's 3/9. Okay, that's 1 micron. 1 inch is 25,000 microns. 1 inch. The average diameter of a human hair is 70 microns. So remember that, 70 microns. And I'll turn off my phone now, and then I'll shut it off, and we'll do better than that. The average human hair is 70 microns. Talcum powder is 10. So each individual piece of talcum powder is 10. Tobacco smoke is 1/2. Oh, come on. Tobacco smoke is 1/2 of a micron. So 70 on a human hair, 10 on talcum powder, and 5 on tobacco smoke. That's what's important, okay? So once you get that down, then we're going to talk about oil filters that are in the 10 to 40 range. Okay, 10 is talcum powder and 70 is a human hair. So 10, 70. Okay, now keep in mind, tobacco smoke is 1/2 of a micron. So obviously filtering out tobacco smoke would be kind of difficult. So then we move, and we're talking about oil filters here. That's the fun part of all of this, the oil filter. A study showed that engine life can be increased by 3 times if you use an oil filter with a 10 micron size as opposed to 40. And this is how they rate it. They say 98% at 10 microns. And what they're saying is each time the oil goes through the particular oil filter, if it's 98%, then it gets 1 out of every 1,000 particles. Are you with me? 1 out of every 1,000 particles. So actually, I'm reading this wrong. It's 100%. It's 200 out of each 1,000 particles. 200 each. Okay, so we got this oil filter, and 200 particles out of 1,000 particles, it's going to grab. What brought this all around was there's this brand new oil filter, and I'm going to read you what it says. It says, da 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 da, it's a new long life oil filter. It lasts up to 10,000 miles and traps 99.5 of the microscopic pollutants. And you look at that and you say, oh, I have to have that. That's for my Corvette. That's for my Mercedes. That's for my very expensive car. I mean, really. A 10,000 miles and traps 99.5 of the microscopic pollutants. But you don't read no further than that, because you just look at the picture and you see the filter and you say, wow, that's cool, now I'm going to ask for that. Down in the article it says, this long life filter is 99.5% efficient in capturing pollutants 40 microns or better. 40 microns, 99.5. So, you go back to the 99.5 chart and you say to yourself, well, what does 99.5 mean? What it means is 99.5, it gets 200 out of every 200 particles. So, it's pretty good efficient. So, it's going to clean up all of it. However, it's 40 microns. So, math would say that if you have 20 micron filter, it's going to get twice that much. This new life oil filter costs me about $8, going to cost you probably 12. This oil filter, I compared it to the cheapest oil filter I could find. The cheapest oil filter I could find was a 20 micron filter. This is a 40. Now when you look at the microns with respect to the 20, it gets 75 out of 75 particles. So if the 15 micron gets 75 out of 75, 100% efficiency at 20 microns. This one's 40 microns and basically gets 100% too. Which would you rather have? The one that filters out the smaller particles or the bigger particles? Now the bigger one, the one that's really expensive, does 40 microns, 100% of 40. It's $12. The other one cost me maybe $3. You see how that works? So you're real confused like everybody else is right now. The idea is the filter, the quality of the filter depends on its ability to filter. Obviously, the smaller the particles, the better off you are. Same with your air filter. You wouldn't want to have a screen door as your air filter. You just wouldn't want that. So the whole idea is that you look at filtration and its ability. Now, if a oil filter had 10% or 10 microns and it only had a 20% filter rate, that means it's only getting one out of every five. See that difference? So we look at two things. Number one, the micron, and number one, the efficiency ratio. So here I offer you these two completely different, diametrically different filters. I got the cheap one on my left hand that cost me $3. It does 100% of 20 microns. I got the $12 filter on my right hand that does 40 microns and does 100% of 40 microns. So which one are you going to put in your car? Which one do you want me to put in your car? But there'll still be lots of customers of mine and everybody else's that will demand this oil filter. And they won't want to listen to us talk about it. They won't want to hear that our cheap filter's better than this one. All they're going to think is that if their car loves them, then the motor will never fail. The alternator will never fail. There's all those kinds of things that are happening. So, as you look at this big process, you say to yourself, why does the automotive industry do this? And they're just like every other marketing and advertising in the world. They just pick a corner and they say, this is where we want to talk about our product. So on this ad, you see lots of 99.5, 99.9 numbers, and you go, wow. The problem is they're filtering out boulders. They're not doing the sand. And so it's kind of crazy. But that's what happens in our industry all the time. Oil filters and air filters. I've said it before. If you find something that has a name brand on it, if you find something that your garage is selling, very few of us are going to, the risk and the reward. Let's look at the risk and the reward for me, for Mark Salem. The risk is if I buy the filters that's 72 cents, it could cost me a motor or two. So for the difference of about $3, the risk is huge. But at $3, there's no risk. 30 years tells you there's no risk. If I go to that $12 oil filter, I'll have the same risk as the $3 oil filter, but in reality, it's doing not as good a job as the cheap one. And this is kind of the mentality that many people have with respect to their concerns about, I want parts from Chevrolet or Ford or Chrysler or Honda or Toyota or BMW or Mercedes. if I've said it once, I've said it 1,000 times, there's no such place on the planet Earth that makes only Honda spark plugs, or Toyota oil filters, or Cadillac belts. The fact of the matter is, as your car is built by the cheapest bidder. Okay? That's all there is to it. No matter what kind of car you have, it's built by the cheapest bidder. So there are companies out there, like Goodyear, who makes belts for lots of people. But when you get into the Nebraska plant, and if they'll tell you the truth, I heard them say that we build a superior belt to all these other belts. Ours is called a Gatorback, and we're not going to let anybody sell our Gatorback, just us. So we have the premium belt, and it's a substandard belt on everybody else's. However, we still pass the society's rules. Whatever those rules are, minimum standards for belts, all these cheap ones pass it, but just barely. But ours, it'll go for 5 generations. And that's kind of how it works. Toyota oil filters, they're not made by Toyota. They're made by Champ. They're made by Wix. There's another big oil filter, and I'll think of a company in just a minute. But they're made by one of the 3 or 4 big oil filters in the world. And they just call them up and they say, hey, Wix, how much will you build so many oil filters for? And Wix says, we'll build them for $110. And then they call Champ, and Champ says, I can only do them for $120. Well, they're going to buy the $110. But your oil filter was made in a factory that made lots of oil, other oil filters. There, 25% of the time when we work on your car, we have to buy something from the dealer because it's not made anywhere else. That number's reducing every year, though, because those parts are beginning to come available on the aftermarket. But you have to trust your shop. Some shops want to go all original equipment. They'll buy all from dealers. Some shops won't. Now, the body shop industry is a completely different animal. We'll talk about that later, but it's a completely different animal. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And Jeremy, give me a call, buddy, and we'll be back right after this. Okay, everybody, we're back on the air and we're behaving ourselves, and I can assure you of one thing. Whenever there's technical difficulties, it's on my end. It's always on my end. And the reason why is that the radio station we have, the radio studio we have, is at the shop. It gets used on Saturdays. So if something happens Monday through Friday, we don't find out till Saturday, and it's always my fault. So it's never KKNT's or anybody else's. It's Mark's fault. Just in the form of comparison, we're going to get to the calls right now. The AMSOIL oil filter, the premium oil filter in the AMSOIL, is 98% efficient at 15 microns. That's not too bad compared to the other really special one at 98% at 40 microns. A typical cellulose oil filter runs about 80% at 15 microns. And those are the ones that are going to be fine. The Purolator Pure 1 is 99% at 15 microns. So really and truly, and Valvoline is 95% at 20 microns. But this new brand new one's at 40. Kind of puzzling. Mike, or Joe, you're up first, buddy. How can I help you?
Well, I've got an old 55 Ford pickup. It's got a 6-cylinder motor, and it has a 6-volt ignition system.
Okay.
And it can sit for weeks, months, and go to start it up. Starts right up. I can drive it, go in and have some coffee, come back in a half an hour, and, you know, they don't start real, you know, the starter doesn't spin real fast anyway.
Right.
I mean, it's like the battery's dead. I've checked the generator. It puts out a little over 7 volts. I have one, the cables, one gauge.
Okay.
And I have it grounded to the starter. I have it grounded to the frame.
Okay, now hold on. The negative cable the positive cable goes where?
It goes to the starter.
The positive cable, and it's a 6-volt system, but it's negative ground.
Yes.
Okay,
correct.
So the negative cable, where does it go?
Well, it goes two places. It goes to the frame, and
okay.
then it also goes off to the engine. You know, at the starter where the starter bolts to the engine.
Okay, fine. This is what you want to do. This is the testing you want to do. You're going to put when this happens, what you're talking about is a hard, slow, hot start.
Yes.
Hard, slow, hot start. So on a 6-volt battery, we want that thing to maybe drop 20%, and that's about it when you're cranking it.
Okay.
So 20% of 6 is 12, or is 1.2, so we're down in the 5.8 range,
okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you crank it over, I don't want the voltage in the battery to drop below really 5.5.
Okay.
If it drops down a whole bunch below 5, then the starter's drawing too much amps.
Okay.
The next thing I want you to do is I want you to get out. You've already tried it, and it goes, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I want you to pull the coil wire off the distributor.
Okay.
Get back in and crank it over. And if it cranks over fast, put the coil wire back on. It cranks over slow, the timing's off.
Okay.
So just watch it both ways. Now, the starter could be drawing too much amps, or the battery could not be handling the kind of amps it's needed.
Okay.
That's the hard part.
Right.
But you're going to spend $35, $40 in any good shop, and they're going to tell you exactly what's wrong with it, whether it's the starter drawing too much amps or the...
Okay.
Here's something else you can do is put another battery in there
or
to carry around a 6-volt carry case that you can buy anywhere.
Okay.
You put one on, or you try the battery, and you hit it, and it still drags. Put the second one on. If it still drags, it's the starter.
Okay, can I ask you one question on a 6-volt battery?
Sure.
Can you recommend one? I have an Optima one in there, and that's pretty good. I mean, as opposed to the Checker Auto ones and stuff.
Yeah.
But, geez, they're kind of hard to come by.
No, you're right. I think, I tell you what I do. I just buy a name brand battery, and I buy the shortest warranty I can. So if it's 36 months, otherwise, if you buy a 100-month battery, they're going to keep your $100 for 100 months.
Yeah.
And at 30 months, you pay $30 for the time you took.
Yeah.
But they're going to keep $70 of your money. So I like short-term, and I like name brands. Just shop around.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Joe. Harry, you're up next, buddy. How can I help you?
Yeah, I've got a couple of questions. You were talking about oil.
Okay.
Years ago, I used to use a filter that used toilet paper.
Yep.
Brands, and I had a...
You're breaking up real bad on me, Harry.
What are your thoughts on those? What do you think about compared to buy them?
Okay, well, I think you're asking me about the add-on oil filters that you can put in yourself, and some of them use a roll of toilet paper and stuff. I don't like the toilet paper idea because the oil pressure of today could tear up the toilet paper, and it can cause the toilet paper to disintegrate, and now we've got small pieces of toilet paper floating around in our oil, and I don't think that that's good for anything, although I don't think that those small pieces are going to do anything like scratch up the crankshaft or the camshaft, but they certainly could clog oil passages. So we want the media in the oil filter not to come apart. And if you don't think toilet paper comes apart, talk to somebody with a septic tank, because we all know toilet paper comes apart, and we all know what it looks like when it's done, because we have leach fields, and so that's how we know. So I'd stick with a filter that's a name brand again, and I'd stick one that has a good media. It could be cellulose, it could be pleated paper, whatever, but the reason they use pleats is because when you set the pleat out, it's 30, 40 inches long. But if it's pleated, we can stick it in a can that's 4 inches in diameter. So I know what you're talking about, the old style stuff, but I don't think you're going to get better. And after all, if Dodge is going to warranty their motors for 100,000 miles, you think that they're going to put a cheap oil filter on there that's going to cause an engine to fail, risk, reward? No, they're going to put on a spin-on filter. It's going to be cellulose, and it's going to probably be a 20-micron filter. Thank you, Harry. And the reason why we had trouble with you just because of the way you were coming in. Mike, you're up next. How are you today?
Good. Have a good day. I just calling about the oil filter thing. I really like the topic. I appreciate it. I've got a Ford with a 7.3 liter diesel.
Okay.
And I've been buying the Ford filter, and it's from Walmart. And somebody told me that Walmart will bid these out and sell you something. It isn't factory, although it has a factory name on it and the same part number. It's got to be the same filter as the factory would sell, correct?
No. First of all, what you've been told is wrong.
Okay.
The reason why is that the filter costs under a buck to do it. And a lot of times, before it gets to me, it goes from the manufacturer to a distributor. The distributor goes to a warehouse. The warehouse goes to what we call a stocking dealer. And then a stocking dealer goes to a jobber, and I get it. So you can understand
Sure. Everybody's
taking money from the pile. But when Walmart calls and orders some oil filters from Motorcraft, put yourself in that position. When Walmart calls and wants oil filters, and they want Motorcraft, do you really think that they're not going to get, the rock-bottom price? Because they're only going to go from the manufacturer straight to Walmart. There's not all those other people in the middle. So not only can Walmart sell them cheaper, but they're buying them cheaper. So I'm pretty sure Motorcraft and Ford and AC Delco would raise holy heck with Walmart if they thought their oil filters were sold with their logo on it, but they were substandard. It's just a matter of cost and volume.
Yeah, and I had one more question if I could.
Sure.
The diesel says I can change oil about every, 5,000, but I've always changed it at 3 because they stood up so much. I've had the thing for 140,000 miles with no issues. Is that necessarily overdoing it with the oil change, or
yeah,
does that sound about right?
I wouldn't do that if I were you. First of all, the very, very best engine that Ford ever built in a diesel is a 7.3. All
yeah,
those 6-liter guys, they wish they had your motor.
I know, they always try and buy it.
Yeah, exactly.
My
right.
Truck.
Exactly. I'd go 5 or 6 with no problem at all.
Really?
I hope you're using a 1540 or
seconds.
A 540.
Yeah, I'm using, it's a 1540.
Okay, that's a semi-synthetic or a full synthetic.
Yeah.
And there's not, you can go 5,000, 6,000. I just did my Duramax. And I'm going to have to take a break real quick, but I just did my Duramax, and I'm running myself on an 8,500-mile oil change interval. And I feel very comfortable, and I have 105,000 miles. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And, Bob, you're next when we come back.
All about that demon, automobile, the metal monster.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. I'm your host, Mark Salem. The time, again, is 10:34, and this hour is brought to you by Kurtz Auto Repair. You're going to be hard-pressed up at Bell and the I-17 to find the level of expertise that their auto technicians actually have at Kurtz Auto. He has years of experience, domestic imports, gas, diesel. Heck, if he could land airplanes on Bell, he'd work on those too. The goal is to offer the best service, affordable prices, and to get you back on the road as quickly as possible without creating a problem. They're located, like I said, at I-17 and Bell on the northeast corner of I-17 and Bell. So just down Bell, just a smidge, and then just north. And that's Kurtz Auto. So if you live in that area and you don't have a really great garage, may I suggest Kurtz. Bob, you're up next. How can I help you today?
Good morning, Mark. I've got a question about engine computers and how they detect octane changes.
Oh,
I've got a 2010 Jeep Grand Cherokee 5.7-liter Hemi, and my wife kind of granny drives it to work every day, but we're going to be taking a trip to Vegas and going to be using the passing lane, and the manual says 89 octane to get the full rated power of the engine.
Okay.
We use 87 octane for the granny driving back and forth to work, but I just filled it up with 91 octane, put 17 gallons of 91 mixed in with the rest. It's a 21-gallon tank, had 87 in it. So what my question is, does it take so many different key cycles before the engine learns of the octane increase? I'm assuming that the higher octane allows the timing to advance a little more and give you more power?
No. There are no key cycle intervals. Here's how it works. I'm the timing. I'm the timing master. And I know the more I advance the timing, the better fuel economy, and the cooler the engine's going to run, and the longer it's going to last. So we're on our way to Vegas, and we're driving along, and you're in 87 octane. Now, let me explain octane first. Octane, low octane, 87, this is what it means. The explosion is like sticking a pin in a balloon. Boom! That's it. That's what 87 is. You know what 90 is? 91, 93? Boom!
Yeah.
One of them is a third of a millisecond, and the other one might be a half of a millisecond. Okay? So, in the low octane, one molecule, put 1,000 people in a gymnasium. And then start with the first guy and say, touch 100, and then 100 touch 1,000. Otherwise, all the people get touched in a very quick, short period of time. However, with higher octane, and this is an exaggeration, but I'm the king of metaphors, 1 touches 2, 2 touches 4, 4 touches 6, 6 touch 6, 6 touch 12. You see my point?
Uh-huh.
So the fire flame is slower, a little slower, but we're still talking milliseconds of time, millionths of a second. So I'm the timing guy, and I go, give me 6, give me 8. Give me 10 degrees before top dead center. 12, 15. Oh, my goodness. He just stepped harder on the throttle. Rattle, rattle, rattle. And the knock sensor says, knock, 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 knock. And he goes, ooh, 12, 10, 11, 10, 9, 9.5, 300 times a second. And it just keeps backing the timing down until it sees that the knock sensor stops screaming. And Nick goes, okay, I'm cool. So, first of all, I want to tell you something. I have a Camaro for sale that has a blower on it. It's 650 horses. I run regular in it. Uh-huh. Okay, it has a supercharger in it. My wife had a Jaguar with a supercharger in it. I run regular. My Corvettes, I run regular. Because here's the reason. I can tell the difference when I'm driving, but my wife can't, my brothers can't, my dad couldn't, my mom couldn't. We can measure on a dynamometer, but the bottom line is you're not going to measure it when you're going to Las Vegas. So it's okay that you did that, but what I'd rather you done is you tell the wife, go fill it up and don't tell me what you put in it, and then you see if you can guess on the way to Las Vegas.
Yeah.
So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. But thank you very much, Bob.
All right, thanks, Bob.
All righty. And let's go to Jim. Jim, real quick, how are you today? What can we do for you?
I'm doing good. Hey, I've got a car that I drive, something that you audiophiles probably don't even consider a real car. But anyway, I drive less than 3,000 miles a year, and it gets me around. I got a 2002 Cavalier,
okay,
Chevy Cavalier, and it seems to arm itself by itself. And in other words, I go up maybe overnight. I didn't put the alarm system activated, and when I go to get in the car, it's activated.
Okay, you got to go to your owner's manual,
okay.
And I'm I don't know, because this car in light years is kind of a Fred Flintstone car.
Exactly.
However, I want you to go to the owner's manual and look on your security system, because I think you can program it. And there's going to be a programming sequence that says, if you want it to automatically arm 10 minutes after the lights go out and the motor shuts off, then hit here. If you want it to just do it with your remote or the key fob, then hit here. So, and really, you're going to be pushing a button, honking the horn, waving a dead chicken around your head, rolling the window up, rolling the window down, because that's the kind of signals we use to talk to the computer. So look in your owner's manual first. If not, pull the battery cable off, let it sit for an hour, put the battery cable back on, and see if that's any better, because we've scrambled the computer, and it may just need a reboot. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, 508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. My name's Mark Salem, and we're here until 12 noon talking about car repair problems. If you'd like to join us, the lines are open. We have three open lines right now. Clark is first, Lance is second, and you can be third. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Larry Harker's Auto Repair. They've been in the Valley since 1967. Bob and Ellen own Larry Harker's Auto, and have since 1989. Their technicians have been with them for years. They are a trusted source for quality repairs at affordable prices in the Phoenix area. They're located at 38th Avenue and Indian School. Larry Harker's Auto Repair, 38th Avenue and Indian School, and I'm very proud to recommend them. One thing I want to tell you, too, is as we talk about the Better Business Bureau Ethics Awards every year, I'm very proud to tell you, although I have nothing to do with it, or at least year to year, I have nothing to do with it. Almost all of my shops have either been a finalist or a winner when it comes to the Ethics Award. Now, years and years ago, 100 years ago, when we did the very first Ethics Award, I was on the board of directors for the Better Business Bureau, and I took care of the audio video and helped create the very first one. Since then, I've felt kind of bad and didn't feel like that I should apply for it. So I haven't. So that's the reason why I have never been a finalist, I don't think, or an award. Or I don't think I've been a finalist. I know I haven't won it. But nevertheless, like Tony's Auto, 56th and Thomas, just won the Better Business Bureau Ethics Award. It's run by Catherine, his sister, who's a lot better than Tony was anyway. But she runs the show. So if you live in the 56th and Thomas region, then you have a winner in your neighborhood. Tony's Auto, 56th and Thomas. Okay, Clark, you're up first. Buddy, how can I help you?
Well, I have a 2007 Mercury Montego. It has the HID headlights.
Okay.
And one of them is out. The parts stores are $90 to $110, and the dealer wanted a couple of hundred bucks. Is it always a bulb, or is there other things? I think there's a ballast on there.
Yep. And it's going to take somebody that knows HID headlights to tell you whether it's the bulb or the ballast. But here's the easy thing. Why don't you just take the bulb out of the other side and swap bulbs?
Aha. Well, it's not so easy. They're kind of hidden down.
Well, I know. One way or another, though, you're going to have to dig stuff out. So, I mean, if you want to diagnose it, that seems to be the easiest way. Just use the bulb that does work. Don't touch it with your greased fingers or anything. Make sure you use towels. Make sure they're cool. But just swap the bulb. That way you'll know if it's a ballast or not, and you'll know what to buy.
That's a good idea. I will try that. What kind of improvement is there in lighting compared to $90 or $100 for a simple bulb that just built?
Well, first of all, let me tell you that if you have true HIDs, there's nothing better than what you have. Nothing better. It's not the blue light. It's not the orange light. It's not all those weird lights you see. It's a true white light. You have a bulb that's like an arc welder, and you have
right.
a 10-foot band, 180 degrees. And I mean the cars that have properly adjusted HID headlights, and we sell those all the time. We sell them. We install them because we have the ballast, we have the bulbs. But when we install them in a car, people just say, it's like daylight. And then when they turn on their high beams, if they don't get HID high beams, then it turns to a yellow light, and they go, I never use my high beams anymore because my low beams are so doggone good. And sometimes if we get them up a little high, then they'll bring them back. We'll have to squeak them down. But you don't want anybody flashing at you, but you want them high enough to where you can see good. And so there's a fine line between flashing at you, saying, hey, idiot, versus I need them up in the air. So, and we can typically find that. But really and truly, the chances of you having another problem with your HID headlights is about zero. So just buy the ballast or buy the bulb and just say, okay, that's just part of driving the car. But there's no better set of headlights. And if you want proof of that, then go talk to the Mercedes people who put HIDs in all their cars. All righty. Thank you very much, Clark. That was a great question. Lance, you're up next. How can
you know,
I help you?
Mark, before we go to Lance, I have a special guest for you.
Okay.
She has a message for you on this very special weekend, and here she is.
Oh, I don't like this thing.
This is Mom.
Mom?
Mom, yes. You sent me an email a couple of weeks ago, and
oh, I remember you well. I remember you well.
It sounds like you're having a bad day, so I called to cheer you up and remind you that it's Mother's Day.
Oh, yeah.
And remind you to go wash your hands.
Oh, you know, bless your heart. We did have a funny exchange, and I remembered you well. Oh, yeah. Folks, what's going on here give me your first name.
My name is Sue.
Sue.
Yes.
Sue and I had an exchange on the emails and stuff, and she said something to me, and my comment was, you sound just like my mother. Well, my mother passed away in 2005, and we were talking. I said something on the radio a long time ago, but I said that I never wash my hands. Well, first of all, I said I'm going to live to be 100, and
right.
when I'm 100 years old, they're going to ask me what is it that allowed you to live to be 100, and my response is going to be I never washed my hands after I left the bathroom. Well, the females that know me went ballistic. And my wife went crazy. My daughter-in-laws went crazy. We're trying to get your boys, your grandsons to wash your hands. But the joke is, and Sue, you got it well. I'm old. And I've never...
You're calloused.
Yeah. And I'm just kind of used to eating dirt and stuff like that. So I don't know a man who can raise his hand and said that I've been sick because I... didn't wash my hands. but aside from all of that, that's how Sue and I became acquainted, and she's kind of my second mom. And but I want to tell you something. I thank you for bringing this up, and I'll tell you why. My mom left suddenly. She went to bed Sunday night, and she was dead Monday morning. And I have tremendous heartache that she bought a house, and I didn't get to go up there and see her before Aww. She passed away. I also have tremendous heartache because I drove, when she lived in Mesa, I'd drive by down the 60 and I'd have time to stop, but I didn't stop. And so those of you that still have mothers, I can promise you this, if you don't send your mom flowers, if you don't call her on Mother's Day, if you don't call her once a week, you're going to regret it.
That's
you're
going right.
to regret it. And I find myself over at my mom's gravesite, and I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking, you know what? I have lots of time now. But, boy, Mom, when you were alive, I didn't. So that's what it's all about. But, Sue, thank you very much. I appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Thank you for being my friend, too, okay?
You too, Mark.
Okay.
Take care. Bye-bye.
So I promise you that's what's going to happen. Lance, let's get back to you. Lance, thank you very much for holding.
Well, thank you, Mark. That was well worth waiting for.
Thank you.
That exchange with the mom. Mark, I learn a lot from your program. I really enjoy it. I look forward to it every week.
Thank you.
I have a 98 BMW 540 with a really quirky alarm system problem. And I've got another question after this, if you have time for it.
But okay.
The alarm system is really strange because I can, at first, just one key for the car when I bought it a few years ago.
Okay.
And the keypad on that key, the fob was kind of worn out. So one, the unlock button worked, but the lock button did not.
Okay.
So I thought, well, maybe the key and the computer in the car were not talking to each other properly, and if I just replace the key, get a new key, get it programmed for the car, my problem's going to go away. Well, it didn't go away. But it's what's so quirky and strange about it is, in the wintertime, the key, the alarm never goes off when I unlock the car. It just doesn't. So I'm thinking it's temperature related, but when it warms up, it only goes off maybe 50% of the time. But sometimes it doesn't, sometimes it does.
Okay, so let me get this straight. First of all, is it a factory alarm or is it an aftermarket alarm?
It's a factory alarm.
Okay. First of all, so half the time, you walk up to the door and you say to yourself, I think it's armed, so I'm going to take my key, open up the door lock, and open the door. And half the time the alarm goes off and half the time it doesn't. Is that right?
Actually, I don't touch the car. The key, the remote, unlocks all the doors and the alarm will go off. If I lock it again immediately, I can turn it off, but I only, you know, I can, it's the same. It doesn't make any difference whether it's with the key, with the fob, and I'm not touching the car, or if I insert the key in the door and unlock it that way, it does the same thing.
Okay. All right. Well, once the alarm is armed, we are going to look at some specific things to start the horn honking and start the siren. So I am the brain for your alarm system. And I'm just going to sit there and watch electrical draw. I'm going to watch the courtesy lights. I'm going to watch the four door buttons, switches. I'm going to watch the hood switch. Because if somebody gets to the hood and opens up the hood, I'll know that light just went on because I'll see that draw in the computer. I'll see the draw. And I'll go, oh, somebody just opened up the hood. I'm going to turn on the alarm. So the problem is when you open the door, it should not turn on the alarm. So the problem is going to be related to the input somewhere where it's not delaying. Because when you walk up to the door and you unarm it, it should allow you to open the door and get in without any alarm whatsoever. It recognizes your fob. If you haven't disconnected the battery, here's what I want you to do on yours.
Okay.
I want you to pull both battery cables, and
okay,
I want you to touch them together. Bang them together, the cables, they're not connected to the battery, bang them together, let's discharge all the capacitors, walk away for 20 minutes, then when you come back, positive goes on first, negative goes on last.
Okay.
Try that. Look in your owner's manual, too, because I think your alarm system is programmable. It's too new, or it's too old to think it is, but we still, the import cars, the British cars, the European cars, the German cars, they were first with these. So yours is a 98, and I think it's possible. Now, if you have an information center, it's probable. So if you have an information center on the dash or over on the radio, and the screen on the radio, it's probable you can program it. The mistake you made was you should have taken it in and given them the symptoms and let them tell you it needs a key or let them tell you it needs something else, because I bet that key was $150.
Yes, it was.
Okay. So, And one other thing, if you want somebody to work on it, I don't know where you live, but in South Chandler, there's Beyer Motor Works, BMW, Beyer Motor Works. He can fix that. There is also Arizona Imports, closer in North Tempe. And you can look on our site at marksalem.com and find other places. But those two really are outstanding when it comes to BMWs.
Okay. So, now, The alarm is just kind of an inconvenient thing, you know.
Okay.
The main problem I'm dealing with right now is a noise. It sounds almost like a lifter problem in the engine.
Okay.
But it doesn't seem to me like any lifter problem I've ever heard. So I'm thinking maybe it's a exhaust manifold rattle.
Well, all right, hold on. Does it come and go depend on engine temperature?
When it's cold, when you first start it up, that's when you can hear it the most.
And within a minute or so, 5 minutes after, you don't hear it?
Not much.
Okay. You're right. See, those are the clues I need, because an exhaust leak does exactly what I ask you. It'll be real bad first thing in the morning with a really, really cold engine, but there will come a time it gets a lot better. It may not be perfect, but a lot better. And many of the import cars don't have an exhaust gasket. They don't even make one for it, so it's just metal to metal.
Okay.
Sometimes you can go in there and just spray it with WD-40 and tighten up some of those bolts, but don't break them, because if you break them, you're in big trouble. You just cost yourself $1,000 to have to drill and tap out an exhaust manifold bolt. So,
thanks for the warning.
yeah, you got. I mean, it's okay. You're gonna heat it up, then you're gonna spray it with WD-40, and then you're gonna let it cool down, and then you're gonna put your socket and wrench on it, and you're just gonna kind of say, "Can I loosen this first?" Oh yeah, it loosens, and then you're gonna tighten it back up. Then you're gonna loosen this one, and then tight, and then pretty soon you're gonna find two or three that are loose already, and you tighten them back up, and you say, "Let's see what happens." So that's what you want to do. I can't do noises over the internet, as you well know, but any good shop, if you drop it off the night before and then stop by in the morning with the key and say, "Hey, let's start it together," we like that. We like that customer participation. Let me hear. You can also put a piece of 3/4-inch heater hose or garden hose on your ear, and when it's running, pop the hood, stick it in your ear, and start waving the other end all around the motor. You'll hear where that noise is coming from.
That's interesting.
Yep. So anyway, got to run, but thank you very much, Len. Now, you had a second question, and if you want to answer the second question, then stay with us. But if you don't, then thank you very much. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. 508-0960.
For a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician.
Hey, Mark, Lance
Mark
dropped
Sarah.
Off. Next up is Mark.
The only two things we can't fix is a broken heart,
Mark,
and the
okay.
crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Rolled out to my Chevrolet. I climbed down up inside. I pulled the choke and I turned the key. But the old girl wouldn't start.
See, she's... This song is a great song, by the way. You should listen to the whole thing, but we're only allowed to play 30 seconds of it at a time. However, I want to tell you, she's just fibbing you when she said her Chevrolet wouldn't start. She just didn't know that she was driving a Ford. My apologies to Tex Earnhardt. He's a good guy. Nevertheless, it was still funny. Alrighty. Quality Transmission says, would you use our time today, Mark, to talk about Mother's Day? So on behalf of Quality Transmissions, I want to remind you that those of us that have lost our mothers recognize that there's no way we're going to know the last time we saw Mom or said, "Hi, Mom," or said, "I love you, Mom," or gave Mom a hug. There's no way you can know. I've never met anybody that knew that was going to happen. So tomorrow's a special day. If you're blessed enough to have your mother still alive, then I hope you spend a lot of time with your mom. I hope you give her a hug. I hope you give her a kiss. And I hope you're involved in her life as much as you possibly can. And just remember that even though you're the owner of your own business, and maybe you've got kids of your own, and maybe even you got grandkids of your own, there's lots of grandparents that probably lose contact with their families as their kids grow older. And, of course, my biggest fear, because I did just exactly that, my biggest fear is that my kids and grandkids will do that to me. So, on behalf of all those of us without mothers for Mother's Day, then pay attention to me and do what you can for your mother. Be nice. Give her a hug. Give her two hugs. Tell her you love her. Okay? All righty. We're going to move on. That's brought to you by Quality Transmission. Bob and Steve over there. Great guys. Mark, you're up first in the phone number. If you want to join us, the lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And Mark, you're up first.
Hello, Mark. Enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I have a 2010 Silverado that when I had about 17,000 miles on it, when I when I was in the highway at higher speeds and I would brake, I would get the shimmy.
Okay.
It was under warranty, yes. I took it into the dealer, and they said it was the rotors, so they took care of it. Fast forward now, about a year and a half later, I've got 32,000 miles on it, and I just started experiencing the same thing. But that's only when I'm on the highway.
Right.
When I'm locally driving, I don't get the shutter or the shimmy.
That's a perfect description, and that's what we ask all the time. Do you notice the shake of the steering wheel and the shake of the whole car around city driving, or only when you're getting off on the exit ramp on the freeway?
Exactly.
And what really happens? Let me ask you a question. Does your wife say that you're a hard, fast, quick breaker, or that you take a long time to come to a stop?
Nope, I take a long time. I've always been. My father years ago taught me that.
Okay.
Be easy on the brakes. My previous vehicle was a 2001 GMC, and I had 110,000 miles on it. And I traded it in, never put brakes on it.
Okay. I can't explain why at 17 and at 32 you got this problem on the Silverado, and of course you got 100,000 miles on the other one, other than the fact that brakes will last forever if all you do is highway driving. But your slow braking probably is participating in the problem, because here's why. You have ABS on the truck, I'm quite sure, and you also have a proportioning valve on the truck. So when you apply the brakes, the system will double the pressure to the fronts, then the backs. And it'll put the backs on first to keep you nice and straight. So it, unbeknownst to you, the rear brakes are gently applied on the back, and then the front brakes get twice the pressure. So they have 15,000 pounds of pressure, and you only got 750 going to the rear. Well, if you just gently brake, we're never going to get the rear brakes to really participate, because they're going to coast. And as soon as the nose of the truck dives, because you're braking a little bit harder, the back end comes up, and then all of a sudden, all the brakes are readjusting themselves. So you're loading the front, but you're taking the load off the back. So I want you to brake a little harder, because this is what's going on. Chances are that your driving habits are not involving the rear brakes, and so they're falling out of adjustment because they're not being used. That puts 100% of the braking on the front, which overheats the brakes, which causes what you call the brake vibration. Warped rotors. So when you go in, I would say to them, this is the second time, and would you please check to see, there's a three-part question. This is the second time. Number two, would you please make sure that the rear brakes are in adjustment, and is there anything I can do to keep the rear brakes in adjustment? The old drum brakes used to be you'd back up and fan the brake pedal. Well, you don't have drum brakes on your Silverado. You got rotors and discs. So it might be a parking brake application. You can ask them that. If I use my parking brake more, will that help keep the rear brakes in adjustment? Because there's two different ways that we apply the parking brake to cars and trucks, and one of them has a little pair of shoes in the back of it behind the rotor, and the other actually clamps the caliper. Well, sometimes when you use the parking brake and you clamp the caliper will take the play out of the rear brakes and adjust up the rear brakes for you. So those are how do I adjust the rear brakes? Does the application of the parking brake help me adjust the rear brakes? And don't just ask the service writer, because he's not going to know. You're going to have to ask the technician, you're going to have to ask somebody. Or next time you have your oil changed, go in there and say, I'm going to see the back brakes on this, and where does the parking brake cable go? Does it go to the caliper, or does it go to the little bitty brake shoes and brake drum on the back side of the caliper? And that answers your question.
Now, the rotors, how many times can you turn rotors before you have need to...
Well, that'll tell us a lot about your driving, too, because if we have a minimum thickness, let's just pretend that the minimum, for the ease of sake of argument, the minimum thickness is an inch. And then let's say they come at an inch and a quarter. Well, if you go in for brakes at 60,000 miles and I still have an inch and a quarter, you've worn the pads out, but you haven't done anything to the rotors, and I can tell that you're a light-footed driver. But if you come in and the pads are wiped out at 60,000 miles and we look and we go, well, we got 1 inch and 10,000ths, so we can only cut 10,000ths off before we get to the minimum standard, and after that we can't do anything more for you, then I know you're a rather aggressive brake guy. So it has everything to do. Brakes are just like anything else. They wear based on their use. And sometimes if you work them hard, I do, then you wear them out a little quicker than my wife does.
Is there any, if I was to continue driving without, you know, doing anything, was any harm?
No, not at all. I mean, actually, you can heat them back up and get them straight, too. So, I mean, we've seen people say that has come and gone. This is what I do. I'd go outside, put the front brakes against a parking block, put it in drive, and pump the parking brake just for the fun of it 50 times. Okay? Then go take a drive and see if the brake pedal has moved on you. So the first time you stop, you go, whoa, boy, that brake pedal's come up. If that's the case, and that's what happens, after 50 applications, the truck's in drive, you might have an automatic release where you put it in drive and the parking brake comes open. Just put the front wheels up against there, and then just pump that, fan that brake. Pull the lever and hold it, and just pump it. If the brake pedal comes up, that's your problem.
Okay.
All right, start using your parking brake more, okay?
All right, thank you.
You betcha.
Bye.
All righty, how we doing for callers?
We got Sean.
Sean? Good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning. Yeah, two calls ago, right before the commercial, you had a guy that called about the alarm and the noise, which was the exhaust leak, which was loud when it was cold, and then it got better. And you just mentioned a quick way to, at the end of the call, where how you could hear the exhaust leak, and I missed it. I was trying to hear it again.
Oh, sure. No problem at all. What we do is we use like a piece of garden hose, but actually we use heater hose. But it's the same thing, 3/4, 5/8. You literally stick it, the end, one end of the hose, and it should be 4 or 5 feet long. And then you just kind of wave it around the exhaust system, and you wave it over the valve covers, and you open up the oil thing and stick it inside there. You got to hold one end of the hose with one hand, and you're going to be waving the hose around with the other. But it's just an amplifier.
Okay.
And you can hear vacuum leaks. You can hear exhaust leaks. You can find ticking noises. You can find grinding noises. It's easy.
So that's like a little microphone in there.
Exactly. That's exactly cool. What it is.
Thanks. Good to know.
All right. Good enough. Thank you very much, Sean. All righty. One of the things that you can buy, too, is you can buy those things that go in your ear, and then there's two rubber tubes that come down to a Y, and then you have this handle, black handle, with like an antenna coming out of it. Okay? Now, if you've ever worked at a repair shop, someone has done this to you. And I've done it I don't know how many times. I'll see one of my technicians working on a car, and he's trying to find a noise in the front belt area. He doesn't know if it's the alternator, the power steering, or the air pump, or the water pump, or the air conditioning idle or compressor. He doesn't know. But he's got this thing plugged into his ears, and he's holding onto the handle, and he's touching different things with that piece of antenna that's probably about 10 inches, 12 inches long. If you walk up... This is terrible. But you know what? I've been on Reel all my life, so I have no apologies. If you walk up and you have a screwdriver in your hand and you do this to the metal antenna, it'll blow his ears off. And he's going to be mad at you. And as you run away, he's going to chase you. And then from that point on, anytime you get close to him and he's got his amplified ears on, he is not going to let you get close to him. I mean, he's going to shoo you away. He's going to squirt you with grease or, you know, something. They're just not – it'll only work once. But those things cost like less than $10. They're very handy to have. But just yourself, plug them into your ears and then take the little antenna thing and just touch something. Just touch something. And you'll see it's like somebody is shooting a gun off in your ear. So – but if you do that and you get your butt whipped, don't blame me. You just picked on the wrong technician. Oh, man. I'm teaching you how to get in trouble on a Christian station. I guess I'm going to be in the principal's office on Monday, but you know what? Been there before. All righty. We got open line 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. If you want to join us, you have a car question, you can. If you want to argue, we'll do that too. I got an email today, and he says, I go to a particular tire store, and they always want to put the new tires on the back, and I'm uncomfortable with that. Well, the RE industry is fighting about that right now, and there's two different trains of thought, and I'll give those to you on the other side of the break here. The idea is that there is no industry guidelines or standards. That doesn't prevent the tire store from creating their own, and typically they're going to pick option A or option B. But there is some good sense to that, but I'm not quite sure I like it. First of all, if you ask 100 people if they want the new tires on the front or the back, 99 of them will say that they want them on the front. but there's a reason why the new tire should go on the back, and it's kind of a logical reason that has to do with a few people, not everybody. So we'll talk about that when we come back. 602-508-0960. I'm Mark Salem. This is KKNT 960 AM. Well, thank you for spending your Saturday with me. We've still got three-quarters of an hour left, so we're going to talk about cars. And if you'd like to join us, the phone number is 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Here's the deal. Do we put new tires, if you're only going to buy two, do we put them on the front of the car or the back of the car? Well, there's so much more to it than just that. Is it a front-wheel drive? Is it a rear-wheel drive? But the real issue is this. You won't believe this, but people die from car wrecks related to blowouts on the rear far more than blowouts on the front. Don't ask me why. I don't know why. But statistically, a rear tire blowout causes more deaths than a front tire blowout. So there's lots of people in our industry that says, hey, we should be putting them on the back. But the tire experts that I respect... And I am a tire expert, but I talk to real tire experts, not just pretend guys like me. They say, Mark, there's so much more to it. There's a difference in tread. So if you have tires that are brand new, you have two that's brand new and two that are 90% worn, then you should have bought four. If the two used ones are 20% worn and the two new ones aren't worn at all, then the four tires are so close together, it doesn't make any difference. On the other hand, if two of the tires are 4 years old and two of the tires are brand new, then you want the new ones on the back. But like I said, I've done lots and lots of radio polls, and I ask people, you're going to put new on the front or the back? And they all say on the front. That's the way we were raised. I think, just like the gentleman that sent me an email, he was saying to me, I really have this great tire shop I deal with, but they've made me uncomfortable because they have this new rule that says that all new tires, if I only buy two, go on the rear. Well, we're trying to overcome that. It is not an industry standard. Our industry is arguing about it, but it's more than just the new ones go on the back. We're going to determine what the difference is between the new ones. Now, if you're in Flagstaff and you have a front-wheel drive car, and if the two tires you have are kind of bald, you put the brand new tires on the back, you put the bald ones on the front, and when it snows, you're in trouble. So there's all those different issues on how we're going to deal with this. We cannot force you to buy four tires. We can't force you. We shouldn't force you either. We should bring it up, but we shouldn't force you. That's not right. So that's kind of what the whole industry is up in arms about. And then they're trying to age out tires, and they're trying to say after 5 years, then you have to age the tire out and discount tire. If you take a car in there with tires that are 10 years old, they won't even touch the tires. They won't even air them up for you because they don't want to be in the food chain. Now, you got to know that Discount Tire gets sued probably every day because they have, 28 states? So they get sued no matter what, just like everybody gets sued. And, we touched a car one time, the tires, and the guy had a blowout, and it wasn't even a tire we sold, and we were in the food chain. And that's just what the legal system does. They just sue everybody who ever touched that, and they get a little bit from this one, a little bit from that one. It's always the eagle and the beaver and the hawk and the slimy salamander. Oh, there are some good attorneys, and most of them are my friends. Nevertheless, that's what's going on. So if anybody tells you it's industry standards on you got to get rid of your tires because they expired, that's BS. If anybody tells you that you absolutely by law have to put them on the back of your car, that's not true either. But in the next couple of years, my industry will come to an agreement on how we're going to handle this. But, on one hand, the tire manufacturers want to age out your tire because that means you can't sue them after the tire blows up when it's 5 years and 2 months old. On the other hand, they're going to sell a whole lot more tires, but the lawyers say, well, if you're going to cut out half of our cases on tires, then we don't want that to happen. We don't want an expiration date put on a tire because that tire should last forever. So you got the lawyers on one side, you got the vendors on the other. The lawyers are going to lose a bunch of cases, and the vendor's going to sell a whole lot of tires. And so that's behind the scenes. So you get the drift. All righty, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Phoenix Body Works was voted as one of the best body shops in Phoenix, and they have been on my best car repair shops list for years. Greg May and his staff have been servicing the Phoenix area since 1982. Phoenix Body Works is one of the best shops in all of the Phoenix metropolitan area. They offer free computerized estimates, a written lifetime guarantee, and of course they're going to be around if you need to use it. They are the insurance claim professionals. Now, here's the difference. They take the hassle out of dealing with your insurance company. They're very insurance company friendly, but they do not derive 90% of their business from one insurance company. When you're sent to a shop by the insurance company, that shop depends on that insurance company to provide 60, 70, 80, 90% of its work. So I ask you this. If the insurance company says to the shop, look it, I don't want to buy a whole new door. You know, that's like $700. And then you got to paint it, which is another $400. So it's $1,100. Look it, just kind of pound it out a little bit, okay? Make it look as good as you can and save me some money. Well, ask yourself, is the shop owner going to call him and say no, or no to the guy who gives him 90% of his business, or is he going to say yeah? Well, you don't have to worry about that at Phoenix Body Works, because Greg's going to do what's right. Their employees are ICAR certified, which means paint and body. They're ASE certified, which means mechanical. They belong to the Better Business Bureau. And I want to remind you that it's your vehicle, and you choose the body shop you want to use. Do not, this is from Mark Salem, do not let the insurance company dictate where you take your car, because that's
Call
not where your bed's served. So Phoenix Body Works is up in North Phoenix. They've been doing North Phoenix, Anthem, New River area for a very long time. They're 19th Avenue, half block north of Deer Valley Road. And if you wreck your car, just remember this, Phoenix Body Works. Okay, who's the caller?
It was Wayne.
Wayne, good morning to you, buddy. How can I help you?
Hey, got a quick question. I've been enjoying your show, by the way, this morning. Out here mowing the lawn and phone you on TuneIn. It's great.
Thank you.
Had a quick question. I have a 09 PSX back here that I bought last year with 58,000 miles on, approximately. And over the course of the last year, have noticed it's just using more and more and more oil. And right now, it's at a point where it's using about a quart of oil between 800 and 900 miles.
2 minutes.
I have an extended warranty on it. It's out of the manufacturer's warranty. I have an extended warranty that the dealership sold me. And I've taken it to a couple of shops local here in Colorado, and both have just looked at it and went, well, there's no oil coming up the tailpipe. There's nothing on the ground. It's using it internally, and pretty much said, deal with it.
Yeah.
Curious, is there anything I can do other than just go swap it out?
But you're in trouble. I can just tell you right now, you're in for a battle. First of all, the aftermarket insurance company isn't going to pay attention to you until you pay someone to tell them what's leaking. Then they're going to look at your contract, and they're going to do everything they can to get out of the contract. So your contract may say, I cover seals, but then you have an O-ring that went bad. And so they say, no, that's not a seal, that's an O-ring, so it's not covered. And we want all your oil change receipts, and we want all your maintenance receipts, and, oh, you didn't service your transmission at 50,000 miles like you should have. So we're going to void your warranty. I want you to go to marksalem.com and look at the FAQs. And there's one in there for oil consumption. It says, check the spark plugs. It'll tell you which cylinder. Check the pressure of the crankcase. Check the PCV valve system. And you're right. There's three places oil is going to go. It's going to go out the tailpipe, and it's going to go on the ground. It's going to go through one of those two places. Someone has to find it and then fit it to your warranty, one way or the other. But look at oil consumption. It's in the 30s of the FAQs. It prints it out for you. But be careful which shop you pick, because you got to pay the way in, and it's a 50-50 shot if they'll pay the repair. So you got to plan on whoever's going to keep it, whoever's going to do the work is going to finish the work, because you're not going to take it somewhere else. If you got another question, hang on. We'll be right back. I'm Mark Salem, 508-0960.
This is Bob.
I'm going to take a real quick call, and who was it?
It was Dan.
Dan, good morning to you.
Yes, good morning. I really am interested in your show.
Thank you. Nice. Thank you.
I have a 1997 Dodge Grand Caravan with a 3-point.
Okay.
And I have a power steering nightmare.
Okay.
What's happening is, to drive it in the morning, there's a puddle of oil underneath it, which is power steering fluid.
Okay.
Cool, and I drive it on many different errands during the day. Not a drop comes. I take the car back, put it in the garage, and I
got 1 minute.
Cardboard down last night, and I have power steering fluid, and the reservoir is empty.
Okay.
There's none in the reservoir. How does it get back up in there?
Okay. I'm going to have you hold on to the break, but
okay.
We're going to talk about this. And anybody else, we've got 4 open lines available, 602-508-0960. We're approaching the end of the show, but we're still 40 minutes away from the end of the show. So you got plenty of, 30 minutes away from the end of the show, so you got plenty of time. 602-508-0960. Dan, when we come back, we're going to talk about that power steering, but I need you to make sure of one thing. Make sure that the power steering level in the reservoir is dropping lower as the leak. They're related. I don't want this to be a transmission leak. Okay, so just when we get back, we'll talk about that. We'll be right back after this.
Most Friday nights, I can be found in the bed of my truck on an old Chase Lounge.
Back yes, sir. I hope you enjoy the music because we worked hard to get car kind of music for the show. And if you enjoy the show, it makes me even twice as happy. So thank you very much for your kind comments. They don't go unnoticed. And you certainly make my Saturdays a great place to be because I feel like I'm helping you and I don't have an agenda. Of course, Mark's never really sat on the fence. I may sit on the fence because I don't know enough about an issue to come to a conclusion. But anybody that's listened to me for any length of time kind of knows that, at least in my warped head, I have a good idea of right and wrong. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by a couple, Brian and Thelma, who own Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa. They've been around since 1970. They can handle anything. And they care for your vehicle as if it were their own. And they truly mean that. Brian and Thelma, husband and wife, really nice people. Have been running Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing Main Street for probably 20 or 30 years. They know what they're doing. They have a really good customer base, and they're a great place. So if you're anywhere near Main and Stapley, they're east of Stapley on the south side of the road. Main and Stapley in Mesa. And if you don't have a good repair shop, may I suggest them. All right, let's go back where we were talking about. And we were talking about the power steering, and we were talking to Dan. Ken, you'll be next. Dan, when you pull into your driveway from the street, I want to know, do you come down the street, do you make a real hard right and then pull up into the driveway and park?
No, I drive straight into it.
Oh, that really complicates things. Okay, well, there's a power steering pump, and it has a high pressure and a low pressure hose that come from the pump to the rack and pinion.
Right.
Now, at the rack and pinion, if it's going to leak, it's going to leak where the two tie rods synchronized go in and out to steer the front wheels.
Mm-hmm.
It's not likely that it's going to not leak when you're driving around and be the rack. It's just not likely. It has to be one of the hoses or the pump. Now, if it's the high pressure hose, and I'm thinking out loud here, if it's the high pressure hose, which by far is the most expensive one, then it would be leaking all the time that the motor was running. But it could be because the reservoir is mounted higher than the pump. It could be that the leak on the power steering hose would leak severely when the car is running, but it would also leak in the middle of the night. The low pressure hose is different, though. The low pressure hose is just going to return the fluid back to the pump to be pressurized and sent down the high pressure line. So it's just a big circle, okay? The low pressure hose cannot leak during the day because the pump is sucking and pushing the fluid into it. But when you park it, because the reservoir is higher, the low pressure hose, and that's the cheaper of the two. This isn't a tough diagnosis. I would take it into your garage the night before. I would write one note, but I'd copy it twice. I'd give one to the service writer, and I'd tape the other one to the rearview mirror. Mr. Technician, this car doesn't leak as I drive it throughout the day. But the minute I pull straight into my garage and park it, then it leaves a heck of a power steering mess, and I know that it's power steering fluid because I'm constantly adding to the reservoir. And when you say that, we know you know what you're talking about, and it's not going to be a transmission problem, which has the same color fluid. So when you put all that together, then find out where the leak is and call me with an estimate. And then when they call you with an estimate, you're going to say, is this a fix or a guess? because I'm not going to spend $400 and then have it still be there. And if I spend $400 and it's still there, then how are we going to unwind that deal? Because I don't want to pay for fixes unless I don't want to pay for guesses unless I agree to it. And in this case, I want someone to know how to fix it. If you can find it, then you bid to fix it. But guessing is not something I want to spend a lot of money on. So that's how I'd handle it if I were you. All righty?
No, I have one more statement to make about it. I don't think I was totally clear. You know, the reservoir is mounted on the firewall.
Uh-huh.
And what happens is, I fill it to cold, where it's supposed to be.
Okay.
I drive it all day. I check it when I come home. It's still at cold. I put the cat bike on, and then when I go to open the hood, the transmission fluid has actually come up through the cap and it's run all over the car. I wipe it down. To make sure I was right, I put a piece of cardboard underneath the reservoir, and it was, you know, it doesn't take much to destroy this piece of cardboard.
All right. Well, what I hear you saying is that you've actually seen the reservoir burp fluid out after you've parked it in your garage.
Yes, it's been there for about 3 hours or so.
Okay.
I'll open the hood and it's burping.
Okay. I have never heard or seen that before in my life.
Neither have I.
And if thinking out loud here, if I had an air leak in the low pressure line, if I was sucking air on the low pressure line, then that would foam the fluid. Now, the air is going to help the fluid turn to foam. That would typically create a power steering whine that you haven't said anything about.
No, don't have it.
So if I foam the fluid, then after you shut it off, then that air is going to want to rise to the top. And it's probably going to burp. What happens if you don't take the lid off for 2 days?
If I don't take the lid off, when I go to get in the car, the power steering makes the noise when I turn left or right.
That tells you that it's low.
Yes.
I've never heard of that before.
And I fill it back up. And
okay. What part of town do you live in?
I live in Mesa.
Okay. If you get this fixed, I'll give you a free oil change if you'll let me look at the bill.
Okay.
I will. Because I've never heard of this before in my life. I understand exactly what you mean. We're burping fluid out of the reservoir.
Yes.
But I don't have a clue.
When it's not running.
And here's what I'm not going to get. Well, I'll give you the free oil change if you get it fixed, but I hope somebody doesn't go in there and replace the pump, both hoses, and the rack, because that's called a shotgun repair. I hope somebody knows what that is, but I'll tell you something else. Do you have access to a computer?
Yes, I do.
Then you go to Google. 97 Grand Caravan, and put quotes around that. 1997 Grand Caravan, quotes around that. Then you write, power steering leak at the reservoir. See if anybody else has ever had that problem. And you're tying all those words together in that order. So you want 97 Dodge Caravan. You can use 97 Dodge Van, or you can use 97 Dodge, whatever you want. But play around with it, and you may find something in there that somebody had your problem, and they know how to fix it. But I'll stand behind my oil change. I'll change your oil in your van free of charge. Just let me see the bill so I can learn from it. And thank you very much for calling, Dan. Ken, you're up next. How can I help you?
I have another situation you heard of, and I may resort to that advice you just gave the last gentleman about Googling. What it is we've got a 2012 Camry Hybrid.
Okay.
Bought it new last October, and it's just been a great car for us, a little workhorse, saving us a ton on gas, and we bought it at the right time. However, in February of last year, I know exactly, we park it in the garage all the time when we're not using it. I went out to go through the garage outside service door. As I'm passing the vehicle, I hear this low sort of a humming noise.
Okay.
And first thought was the neighbor's air conditioner, and then I say, wait a minute, it's February. There's no air conditioning on. So I go out and I come back in, passing the vehicle again before I go in inside the house. I hear the same noise. So I start to listen. Instinctively, I go to the front of the vehicle, listening there. I don't hear it. So I work my way back toward the trunk area. It's getting stronger. I hear it. Pop the trunk. I hear it even stronger. It appears to be coming from either the battery pack area or the service battery. I'm not sure. At this particular time, I hadn't driven the car because my wife, say, was out of town. She for a couple days. And so I checked to see, boy, did anybody leave anything on? Lights, anything, nothing.
Fine. All right, we got to hurry.
So, I noticed it the other day.
Okay, but with your hands, you're going to do a better job. You've done a fine job so far, but with your hands, you're going to have to start touching stuff. You're going to have to feel the vibration. This has a gas motor, right?
Yes.
Okay. Where's the gas tank at? Right underneath the trunk. And one of the things I want you to do when you hear that noise again is I want you to take the gas cap off, and I want you to put your ear up to the gas filler neck.
Okay.
And if that pump's running, then it's easy. The relay's stuck.
Ah.
Okay? So we have to identify what it is first, but you don't have air suspension on that. And the only thing that in the back of that car that's going to run is going to be something electrical, or it's going to be the pump inside the tank. And that's what we have to find. So I want you to pop the trunk again, and I want you to close your eyes and start feeling things. Mm-hmm. Touch the left, the right. Pull the carpet up. Touch everything. But go to the gas filler neck, and if you hear the noise coming out of the filler neck, then you go back and you say, this fuel pump is running, and here's how I know it. And it's sitting there running by itself. Now, it's unusual for it to do that for very long without it running the battery down.
Okay.
So it could be that something is cycling on and off. There could be a fan. I don't know because I'm not a hybrid guy. Mm-hmm. But if you find it and you say, if you touch right here, you can feel the vibration and feel the humming, then the question to the tech is what's right there? And he goes, oh, that's the converter. Oh, okay. Well, the converter's making noise. Well, the converter shouldn't even be on. Okay. That kind of thing.
Okay.
All right. Well, good luck to you. Thank you, Ken.
All right, thank you.
And I'd like to know again what you find at that. And if I was right about the fuel pump, I want you to know it was just a wild guess. Okay?
All right. I'll let you know.
All right. Thank you very much. You know, everybody comes out with, recalls all the time. And the media makes a big deal about recalls. Toyota's been in the news and blah, blah, blah. I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to read you something. Ford has recalled 14 million vehicles in 8 separate recalls over a 10-year period on one problem. It's taken them 8 times to fix the one problem. The problem is certain vehicles can catch fire at night while they're in the garage and burn the house down and kill people. Now, it wasn't just 2 fires. Like I saw a recall the other day, they had 2 fires. This is 500 fires and 1,500 complaints.
2 minutes.
So when you look at this, Ford trucks, motorhomes, vans, trucks, they parked in the garage, you're in bed, all of a sudden the keys are on the kitchen table, and all of a sudden the house is on fire. So every time, number one, they tried to fix it. Oh, it didn't work. Number two, number three, number four, number five, number six, number seven, and number eight. On the 8th attempt, they finally fixed this bad electrical circuit by wiring the circuit like the rest of the world wires the circuit. Not Ford's way, the rest of the world. And you know what else they put on this electrical system? A fuse. A fuse. That's why I have heartburn. That's why I have. Goodyear pulled the same thing on some tires for the last 20 years, some G59 tires. Goodyear pulled a... And it wasn't the guys on the streets. It's the guys back in Lincoln, Nebraska. It's the big shots. It's the lawyers. They've been hiding stuff from everybody, and they just got caught. And a federal judge caught them lying. And they've been telling everybody about their particular tires and how great they are. But fact of it is, some stuff arose from with their handwriting on it that says that this tire was never designed to go past 65 miles an hour. And you know what? We had all kinds of older people driving motorhomes with this tire doing 70 and having blowouts. And you know what else? Mark Salem's family experienced three of them. And we almost all got killed in one of them when the left front tire blew and almost threw me off the edge of a cliff. 65 miles an hour. So that's the reason I have heartburn. But Mark at MarkSalem.com is your local car psychiatrist. You can also go to Facebook and like me if you want. I'm also on Twitter. And anytime you need a car question, you just email me, Mark at MarkSalem.com. Please drive safely. Please wear your seatbelt. Please don't drink and drive. And God bless you. And Mom, I still love you.